Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, this is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. We're at the end of the year now, and we very much appreciate any donation that you can make to Pardes and to the podcast itself. You can donate online at any time via pardes.org.il. Thank you very much. This week, Vachi. This week, Rabbi Leon Morris discusses Vayechi. Rabbi Leon Morris is the president of the Pardes Institute. And now, Rabbi Leon Morris.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parasha, Vayechi, concludes Sefer Bereishit, the book of Genesis, and it ends with a particularly captivating promise and idea. The parasha ends with Joseph's death at the age of 110, and on his deathbed, Joseph makes his brothers take an oath that when they or their descendants leave Egypt, they will carry his bones with them and take his bones back to the land of Israel. And this is really the beginning of a saga of Joseph's bones that starts here at the end of the book of Genesis. It reappears in the book of Exodus, as we'll see in a moment. And again, it reappears in the book of Joshua, the beginning of Nevi'im, of the prophets. And from there, it enters into the world of Midrash. I want to begin with the psukim, the verses from this week's parasha. But let me just say first that I have had a 25-year fascination with the stories of the bones of Joseph, first introduced to them about 25 years ago. And I realize that I'm recording this in Jerusalem, in the state of Israel. And at a certain point in my obsession with stories of Joseph's bones, the New York Times improved their website and had a search function where every issue of the paper would be available to readers of its website. And at some point, probably about 15 or 20 years ago, I typed into the search function Joseph's bones. And what I came up with was a story from August 7th, 1949, reporting that the body or the bones of Theodor Herzl were going to be flown on August 16th, 1949, to Jerusalem to be reinterred. And in the New York Times coverage of this story, the writer says, "This event is regarded here as the biggest of its kind since the burial near Nablus of the mummified remains of Joseph, which the prophet Moses took along the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt." It's amazing that the writer of the story realized that this big 20th century reinterment of bones was actually modeled in certain ways or echoes back to the reinterment of Joseph's bones. But before we get to the reinterment of his bones, I want to begin with his death and the promise at the end of our parasha. So we are, if you're following along, we are in Genesis chapter 50, verse 24. Vayomer Yosef el Echav, Anochi met, velohim pakod yifkod etchem, veheela etchem min haaretz hazot, el haaretz asher nishba laAvraham, liYitzchak, uliYaakov. Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm dying, but God will remember. Surely remember you. God will bring you up from this land to the land about which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Vayashba Yosef et b'nei Yisrael lemor, pakod yifkod Elohim etchem, v'ha'alitem et atzmotai mizeh, vayamot Yosef ben mea ve'eser shanim, vayachantu oto, Vayisem ba'aron b'mitzrayim. Joseph had the children of Israel swear, saying, "When God remembers, surely remembers you, bring my bones up from here." So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was placed in a coffin in Egypt. So one thing to note is the repetition here of the exact phrase of God remembering God's promise to take us out of Egypt. So twice Yosef repeats the words, the phrase, Pakod Yifkod, God will surely remember, in the infinitive absolute. And this also will get picked up by the Midrash that we'll look at in a moment. So here at the end of Genesis is this promise that Joseph exacts from his brothers, this oath that they will bring his bones up one day from Egypt to the land of Israel. And sure enough, we don't hear about Joseph's bones again until we're in the middle of Sefer Shemot, the book of Exodus, and the Torah is recording the escape from Egypt. And suddenly, in chapter 13 of Sefer Shemot of Exodus, we re-encounter Joseph's bones. Vayasev Elohim et ha'am derech hamidbar yam suf, v'chamushim alu v'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. Vayikach Moshe et atzimot Yosef imo, ki hashbea hishbia et b'nei Yisrael le'mor, pakod yifkod Elohim etchem, v'ha'alitem et atzmotai mizeh itchem. God led the people around through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the people of Israel went up armed out of the land of Egypt, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had solemnly sworn the people of Israel, meaning Joseph had caused the people of Israel to swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here with you. So, and then it continues with the journey. Vayisu misukot vayachanu be'etam bikze hamidbar. They took their journey from Sukkot, and they encamped in Etam, in the edge of the wilderness. So, second appearance of Joseph's bones, that Moses himself carries Joseph's bones, gathers Joseph's bones. We'll see this gives such great openings to the Midrash of how did they know where they were and how did they remember and why was it Moshe Rabbeinu, why was it Moses who saw to this task himself? And just to follow through with all the references to Joseph's bones in the Tanakh, we jump to Nevi'im, to the prophets, to Sefer Yehoshua, the book of Joshua, chapter 24. Vayavur Yisrael et Hashem kol yemei Yehoshua v'chol yemei hazkenim asher he'erichu yamim achrei Yehoshua v'asher yad'u et kol ma'asei Hashem asher asal Yisrael v'et atzmot Yosef asher he'elu v'nei Yisrael mimitzrayim kavru bishchem b'chelkat hasadeh asher kana Yaakov me'et b'nei Hamor avishchem b'me'a kesita v'yihyu livnei Yosef l'nachala. And Israel served the Eternal all the days of Joshua and all of the days of the elders who outlived Joshua and who had known all the works of the Eternal that he had done for Israel. And the bones of Joseph, which the people of Israel brought out of Egypt, they buried in Shechem, in a parcel of ground which Jacob bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, and it became the inheritance of the sons of Joseph. So those are the biblical references, three references to the bones of Joseph, our Parsha, the end of the book of Genesis, the middle of the book of Exodus, right as the children of Israel are leaving Egypt, and then once the land is inherited by the children of Israel, the bones of Joseph are buried in Shechem, in Nablus. So this is a fascinating reference, which Midrash and Talmudic Agadah pick up and run with. And I want to share some of that beautiful imaginative expansion of this biblical story with you. So one of the oldest collections of Midrashim that we have is the Mechilta of Rabbi Yishmael. This is a Tanaitic halachic midrash, meaning that this is a genre of midrash that dates from the period of the Mishnah, the earliest strata of the rabbis. And it largely concerns Jewish law, this collection of midrash, although the section that we're going to be reading from is not really a legal section. And there are parallels to this material found also in the Gemara. There's a shorter version of this in Masechet Sota, page 13a in the Talmud Bavli. But for our purposes, I want to read and comment on the Mechilta's expansion of this. So the Midrash begins with the quote from our Torah portion, Vayikach Moshe et Atzmot Yosef Imo. Sorry, it begins with the Exodus culmination of the bones of Joseph. So Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. And the Midrash goes on to say that this proclaims the wisdom and piety of Moses, because all the rest of the Israelites were busy gathering the booty from the Egyptians, while Moses busied himself with the duty of looking after the bones of Joseph. This is an important statement about leadership and the loneliness of leadership and the otherness of leadership. Moses takes it upon himself. It's his responsibility to fulfill this 400-year promise, 430-year promise. And he remembers and he does his duty, but he's an outlier in this task. And the Midrash imagines that everyone else is engaged with other tasks, but Moshe sees to it that the responsibility of gathering Joseph's bones are his. Later on, the Midrash will say that in a case of midah keneged midah, of measure for measure, because Moses occupied himself with the mitzvah of fulfilling the promise of gathering Joseph's bones, that God himself will be the one to bury Moses, as we're told at the end of the book of Deuteronomy. The Midrash in the Mechilta continues with a probably the most sensible question. How did Moses know where Joseph was buried? And here, the Midrash says that vital piece of information comes from an incredibly wise woman named Serach bat Asher. And she survived from that generation, and she showed Moshe the grave of Joseph. She said to him, "The Egyptians put him into a metal coffin, which they sunk deep into the Nile River." So Moses stood and went to the Nile. He took a tablet of gold on which he engraved the four-letter name of God and threw it into the Nile and cried, "Joseph, son of Jacob, the oath to redeem his children, which God swore to our father Abraham, has reached its fulfillment. If you come up, if you make your coffin rise up from the bottom of the river, well and good. But if not, we shall be guiltless of your oath. Immediately, Joseph's coffin came to the surface, and Moses took it. So it's a beautiful, beautiful story. Why Sarah bat Asher? Because her name happens to appear in a genealogy of the generation that went down to Egypt and reappears in the genealogy of the children of Israel who went out of Egypt. So the Midrash imagines her as a wise old woman who is the only survivor from that original generation and has this vital information that enables the proper journey of the children of Israel to take place. Now, I'm going to skip a little bit of the Midrash to the most beautiful part, in my opinion, which is the Midrash imagining the optics of the children of Israel for 40 years, carrying with them two chests, two aronot, two cabinets. They have the coffin with Joseph's bones, and they will soon have, and for most of their 40-year journey, the Ark of the Covenant. Now, it's important to note that in Hebrew, Aron is both a coffin as well as an ark. So here the Midrash loves this idea and imagines all the nations of the world who the children of Israel are passing, whose territory they're passing through, are taking note of the fact that at the very front of this long encampment are two aronot, two arks, two chests. One is the coffin of Joseph, and the other is the Ark of the Covenant with the Ten Commandments inside. The Midrash says, Shahaya mahalach arono shel Yosef im aron che ha'olamim. V'hayu ovrim v'shavim omrim, ma tevan shel shnei aronot halalu. So, the two chests, the two cabinets, the two arks, the Ark of Joseph and the Ark of Everlasting Life, the Ark of the Covenant, would pass and people would say, what is it about the nature of these two arks that they should be carried together? V'hem omrim lehem, ze arono shel meit, v'zeh arono shel chei ha'olamim. And the people respond, this aron, this ark, is containing a corpse. And this ark is the ark of everlasting life. A beautiful contrast and symmetry that the Midrash plays upon of life and death being carried together. Then the Midrash imagines the people asking a more substantive question, going a little bit deeper. Va'omrim lahem, ma tivo shel meit lehaloch im aron che ha'olamim? But why would, what would it be in the nature of this corpse that it should be accompanied by the Ark of Everlasting Life? Va'omrim lahem, Hamunach ba'aron zeh, kayem ma shekatu b'munach ba'aron zeh. The one who is resting in this ark, meaning Joseph, he fulfilled what is written inside this other ark. And the Midrash goes on in an absolutely exquisite way to show how each of the Ten Commandments was fulfilled in the life of Yosef. And this is kind of Midrash at its best. Some of the proof texts are a bit forced, But it's beautiful, and the idea is profound. And in fact, the Midrash, at the conclusion of showing how Joseph fulfilled all 10 commandments, is kind of on a roll, and then throws in another few commandments as well, beyond the 10. And this seems to be the Midrash exploring the way in which human beings can become an embodiment of Torah. That Joseph's plans to have his brothers promise that their descendants will bring his bones back paved the way for the Midrash and its imagination to underscore the way in which Yosef HaTzadik, Joseph the Tzaddik, the righteous one, led a life which was a human embodiment of Torah. That what is written in this ark was fulfilled in the life of the one whose bones lie in this ark. And it seems to be presenting all of us with a paradigm of our own religious strivings. What's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to become an embodiment of Torah. And that's what the Midrash reads into this beautiful and strange saga of Joseph's bones. From the end of the book of Genesis to the middle of Exodus to the book of Joshua. I think there's something else that Joseph's bones is teaching us. There's something both throughout our parasha and in this end point of his bones, which is about how we think and relate to the past. In the earlier part of our parasha, Joseph and his brothers show two very different ways of reacting in response to the past. Joseph's brothers fear that he'll take revenge on them now that their father, Jacob, has died. And they ask, what if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrong we did to him? And Joseph responds, although you intended me harm, God intended it for good. And Joseph forgives. Joseph's faith enables him to gather strength from his disappointments and his trials, and he transforms himself from a spoiled, narcissistic young man who held himself above his brothers into a model of compassion, forgiveness, and leadership. These are some of the qualities, I think, that make him an embodiment of Torah. So what we have here is that Joseph's brothers are kind of paralyzed by their past. They're stuck. They dwell on their own acts against their brother, and they doubt their brother's willingness to move forward, to forgive. And in contrast to them, Joseph is able to use the painful experiences of his past as a means of acquiring wisdom and maturity. In Joseph's capacity to suffer, he discovers his ability to change. His difficulties help him to mature. We learn from the story of his life that obstacles, pain, and suffering are opportunities for us to grow as individuals. While the children of Israel carry Joseph with them, this provides a kind of model for how to use the past. Many generations of Jews in modernity have to varying degrees neglected the oaths made by previous generations. That part of our intoxication with modernity resulted in some viewing our past and its tradition and its sacred text as dried and discarded bones that had been carried through thousands of years of wandering. Some thought that carrying these relics of the past held us back. But this beautiful midrash about the bones of Joseph together with the Ark of the Covenant leading us forward suggests that bones, if carried well, help us move forward. That there is a way of hanging on to the past that can make you stuck. That's Joseph's brothers. But there's also a way to hang on to the past that can move us forward, that can advance our journeys. For some, study, prayer, ritual, acts of loving kindness prevent us from staying in the same place. They help to move us forward, move us beyond ourselves. The story of Joseph's bones that begins in this week's parasha challenges us to hold on to our people's past in a way that helps us to progress, to reach new places, or even to return home. Joseph's bones teach us that the past can liberate us and can lead us forward.
Thank you, Rabbi Morris. Check out all of the electronic learning via the web, available at our electronic learning website. That's elmad.pardes.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.